Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, December 11th. We're getting deep into the holiday season. My name is Magnus Thiebald. I'm your host for today. Joining me to also here in the studio is Peter Haskell.
Yes, hello. I got from the library, 1974, yep. It was a cover story on a McKissinger.
Interesting.
That was Newsweek.
And you're going to be talking a bit about Henry Kissinger later in the program.
Yes, mainly negative, but I'm also going to bring up why some people liked him. And this was a very positive cover story because there was a cartoon and he's like a Superman, like the costume.
Well, we'll definitely get into that later. But 1973, he was still riding high in his reputation.
Four. 1974 was the... June 10th, 1974, was the cover story on Newsweek.
All right. Ayu Sakamoto is going to be joining us shortly as well to talk about... she attended the presentation of the Early Music Society of Handel's Messiah on Friday night. She's going to tell us about that. But we're going to start the program today with an interview with Maita Santiago. She is a counselor with the City of Burnaby, Burnaby City Council. And I talked to her about the Handy Dart service and efforts to improve that. Here's our interview. Thank you for joining me. Maita Santiago is a counselor with the City of Burnaby. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Magnus. Thank you for having me.
So you've moved the motion at Burnaby City Council endorsing an open letter from the Save Our Handy Dart Coalition. What is the issue at stake here?
Yeah, that's right. So the issue is about, the Handy Dart service. Mm-hmm. We had a chance to meet with some folks from the Save Our Handy Dart Coalition, right. And they really highlighted some really concerning and troubling things with regards to how, the continued contracting out of this service is affecting the
client. Maybe you could first tell me, just before we get into it, tell me, what is the Handy Dart service?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, so the Handy Dart service, it's... I guess it's what they call a paratransit service. Mm-hmm. It's a door-to-door service that it's a shared ride service for people who are unable to navigate conventional public transit without assistance. Yep. Right. So, this could be like a range of folks, people with, different kinds of disabilities, and a lot of the elderly seniors also take this service.
Right. Great. And so you're supporting this open letter from the Save Our Handy Dart Coalition.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I was really pleased to see the rest of council support it as well. So we were able to pass this motion. The motion asks that the City of Burnaby be added as a signatory to the open letter to Minister Fleming. And it calls for four things. One is to fulfill TransLink's original pledge to limit the percentage of taxi trips being used to 7% or lower of total Handy Dart trips. Two, to direct TransLink to provide accessible, affordable, and increased Handy Dart transportation as part of the government's commitment to implement the Accessible BC Act. Third call of the letter is calling on TransLink Board to develop and conduct an unbiased public sector comparator with the full participation of Handy Dart riders and workers so that there can be a comparison of the costs and benefits of insourcing to the continued outsourcing, which is what TransLink had promised in 2016. Mm-hmm. And the last call, and I think this is the most important one really, is to develop and implement a plan to bring Handy Dart in-house as a subsidiary of TransLink, including providing provincial and federal funds for permanent facilities for an expanded and electric Handy Dart fleet.
Great. And that on that last point, you know, Handy Dart, you know, is under the TransLink umbrella, at least in the Vancouver region, and it's currently contracted out to a private company which actually provides the service. And one of the issues that that Handy Dart users are having is not only with that circumstance, but also the fact that further from that, a certain amount of rides are further sort of contracted out to taxis, to not the dedicated Handy Dart vehicles and drivers. What are the Save Our Handy Dart Coalition users saying to you about this?
Yeah, so they're saying it's really problematic, and they're seeing taxis being used, say, up to like 23% of the time. And I think we need to also consider, as Councillor Seb Dhaliwal pointed out during the council meeting, this is also problematic because I guess initially the idea is taxis would be used if the Handy Dart service is unable to accommodate the riders, right? So it's sort of be like a backup. And then I think at the time taxi services were required to have a certain percentage of their fleet as being able to accommodate wheelchairs and having drivers who are trained. But then when Uber came in, you know, this really also decimated, right? You know, our taxi industry. And so now, you know, you've got Handy Dart sort of offloading this service onto an industry that's, you know, even less capable of handling it. And it's also, you know, we also heard that this contracting out is having effects on the workers, on the worker morale. There have been 4 contractors in recent years. We also heard that every time there's a new contractor, you know, these contractors, they don't share, right, information and policies, you know, with each other. So it's like this brand new thing, and, you know, and it's really not serving anybody. So I think ultimately what's needed is we need to start working towards how we can bring this service in-house. Mm-hmm. And in the city of Burnaby, this is something that, you know, we've also strived to do, right? You know, over the years, over the decades, as much as possible to be able to provide, you know, city services, right? You know, by city staff instead of contracting them.
Okay, so it's interesting you say actually the contractor has changed several times in recent years. I wasn't aware of that. Because, of course, you see the Handy Dart vehicles traveling around, so presumably an operator comes in and takes over the whole operation somehow.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear, Magnus, yeah, when I heard that that every time there's a new contractor, you know, they don't, it's not like they're going to give whatever policies or operational procedures they have to the next one, right? Mm. So, you know, you can really see how this is not serving the workers, and it also doesn't sound very efficient.
No, it doesn't.
Right? So
yep.
Initially, I think it was First Transit was operating it, and then now it's another, you know, it's another company. Yeah, so it's not a good system, and we really need to provide, I think as a society, to realize the value of ensuring that we have this paratransit service for people, and how it's also critical to look at the experience of the riders. Because if, for example, we've got, taxis, right? And it's not to criticize them, but, you know, they're also just not trained or equipped. Right. To provide that door-to-door service. And with Handy Dart, it's not just getting people from one point to another, right? It's also, you know, assisting them, and, you know, and it also helps when it's the same driver and it's guiding them along. And if a rider has a bad experience one time, you know, then they might be less inclined to use that service again. You know, so then this would affect, you know, a whole host of things, right?
So well, yeah, it really affects their sort of a bit, their mobility and their ability to get around and, you know, live a life the rest of us take for granted.
Yeah, exactly. Right. As we saw during the pandemic, how critical it is to be able to provide ways for people to overcome the social isolation you know, and then another thing that they might do is they might rely on, you know, private vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. You know, to get around, which is also not good in terms of our climate goals.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me, you know, a few years ago, we had someone working with our organization who needed Handy Dart to come and go. And it's not something I'd ever thought about, but I was surprised to find out that it's not actually that timely. I mean, yes, it's getting them there, but sometimes, you know, they end up having to arrive like 90 minutes or 2 hours before their appointed time because that's when a ride's available. And, you know, it's like, okay, no, I got to leave now. I'm not really finished what I'm doing, but if I don't go now, I don't have a ride. And that seems like an area that could be improved too, because I think if any of us thought about, you know, being put on those kinds of time inconveniences, that seems an issue too.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, and it's unjust, right? Mm-hmm. To have that barrier or to create that difficulty for folks just because they happen to have, you know, a certain disability or they happen to have certain physical or cognitive challenges.
Right. So the motion was passed at a recent council meeting. Can you tell me a bit about that? And what was the reaction of reaction of your fellow councillors?
Yeah, so we passed it at our December 4th council meeting, and the rest of council was, you know, extremely supportive of it. And so it was great. And I think, you know, and again, you know, we've got a great council, Magnus, mm-hmm. that really saw the value of ensuring that we have a strong Handy Dart system to service, you know, the most vulnerable, really. Right? Mm-hmm. Residents of Burnaby. And I'm also proud to say that the city council also sees the value in ensuring that workers that provide this service, you mm-hmm. know, are also treated well so that they can do, you know, do the job that, you know, that they need to do and that they're supported. And, you know, by contracting out and having different contractors and, you know, it's just not working for anybody.
Right. Do you know what TransLink response is to the idea of bringing Handy Dart in house?
Yeah, I do know, Magnus, that the folks at Save Our Handy Dart Coalition made a presentation to TransLink. You know, I'm sure they can speak more to that, but you know, we're certainly hopeful that you know, TransLink will look at this and realize that it's time to take steps to bringing it in-house so that we can really ensure that we have a strong Handy Dart system to service, you know, these clients who need that. And I guess I also just want to mention that I came to this issue from a personal mm-hmm. Standpoint, because my dad, he used to live with us and he had dementia and he used Handy Dart regularly right. to get to his day program. And it was just, you know, an invaluable service for dad and also for our family. And I saw that, you know, sometimes we would have the same driver, you know, that would come. So they knew dad, they'd pick him up in the morning and they'd be the ones to take him at night. And the first time, because I didn't know about Handy Dart, Magnus, but the first time when they came to the door, helped him down the stairs, I was, you know, I was really impressed and super grateful that we had something like that. And then I remember one time it was Christmas, we'd gotten up late, Handy Dart driver came to the door and we're like, oh my gosh, his dad's not ready. Can you wait a few minutes? Right. And they did. And so dad was able to go to his program and, you know, and see the friends and the folks that he had there. And so again, it's not just, you know, moving people right from one place to another.
Well, great. Well, thank you for speaking to me today. Maita Santiago is a Burnaby councillor, and she moved a motion that was passed on December 4th at Burnaby City Council endorsing a letter by Save Our Handy Dart Coalition, and particularly asking for both for the Handy Dart service to be brought in-house rather than contracted out, and to reduce the use of taxis, and I guess generally provide a stronger service for our disability community here in Burnaby.
Yeah, thank you so much, Magnus, for the opportunity to speak to this. And I should mention that the Save Our Handy Door Coalition, it is a coalition of riders, their families, disability justice advocates, labor and community groups who've all come together, right, to fight for the future of Handy Dart. And, you know, as a local elected officials, we're, you know, pleased for this chance to support them. And for more info, folks can go to their website, saveourhandydart.ca, and they have a petition up, and, you know, you can also take a survey to help contribute what your experience or your thoughts might be. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for bringing that up. Maita San Diego, Burnaby Councillor, thank you for speaking to me today.
Thank you again.
Thank you to Maita San Diego, Burnaby Councillor. That website, again, is the saveourhandydartcoalition.ca. You can find out more information about both the motion and the issues that the ridership has with the Handy Dart service and the improvements that they'd like to see. Of course, it's not all bad news. As Maita said there, it is a very valued service, and that's why they want to see the improvements they're looking for. We're going to play a quick track here from Leila Bialy. She is a Canadian singer-songwriter, and this is from a new release of hers called Holiday Singles. And this is Joni Mitchell's classic tune, River.
It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees, they're putting up a reindeer, singing songs of joy. Of joy and peace, oh.
Leila Bialy and Joni Mitchell's River. Leila Bialy is on tour right now, and she has a couple dates in our area. This Friday, December 15th, she's playing the McPherson Playhouse in Victoria. And Saturday, December 16th, at the Inlet Theatre in Port Moody, and with a program of winter songs and holiday classics. So I'm sure you'll be hearing that track, as well as many other favorites. All right. Ayu Sakamoto is here in the studio with us to talk about Early Music Vancouver. Yeah. And Handel's Messiah.
Yeah, Handel's Messiah.
Awesome. Take it away. Tell us about it.
Yeah, thank you. I attended Handel's Messiah concert last Friday, December 8th, at the Orpheum. And the Pacific Baroque Orchestra, led by conductor Alexander Wayman, and the Vancouver Chamber Choir collaborated to several timeless Christmas pieces. The Pacific Baroque Orchestra, known for performing Ari music for modern ears, was formed in 1990 and has become a force in Vancouver's music scene. The Vancouver Chamber Choir, founded in 1971, is recognized as one of North America's best professional choruses, with a diverse repertory, performing internationally and receiving numerous awards. The concert also featured four acclaimed soloists: soprano Sherzaid Pastaki, alto Alison McHardy, tenor Nicholas Scott, and bass Jonathan Adams. I was super excited before the concert because I had never been to Handel's Messiah concert before, but I knew it was a well-known and historical performance. And when I was in high school, I was part of a choir and had a chance to sing with the orchestra, so I was sure that it was going to be an amazing experience for me. Handel's Messiah is an English oratorio that was composed back in 1741. It had its premiere in Dublin on April 13, 1742, and later in London. At first, it didn't receive a lot of attention, but over time, it became one of the most famous and frequently performed choral pieces in Western music. Hallelujah's chorus is so iconic and widely recognized, which make Messiah a staple of the festival season. This is actually my second time going to the Orpheum, and once again, I love it there so much. It's such a gorgeous and elegant setting. When I was in Japan, I had many opportunities to go to concert venues both as an audience and as a member of choir, but I've never come across the concert halls as gorgeous and elegant as the Orpheum. The decorations inside are really beautiful, and during the concert, the orange and purple lights create such a nice atmosphere. The concert overall was so amazing. Especially, I really enjoyed listening to the live performance of Hallelujah. Everyone in the audience stood up, and it created a sense of unity. I was surprised because I didn't expect us to stand during the song, but I found out that it's a tradition started by King George II of England. The song itself has a consistent rhythm, and the repeated phrase Hallelujah is so powerful. The trumpet and timpani gave the music a fancy and luxurious feel. One thing that sets Hallelujah apart from other religious music is its bright and optimistic tone. It's not as serious or majestic as some religious music can be, and I enjoyed it so much that I wanted to sing along with them. I also love the sound of organs, and they play a crucial role in Messiah. Without the organ, the whole piece will sound completely different. I'm not exactly sure how organs work in church music, but the sound of the organ always reminds me of Baroque music and give me Christmas vibes. Also, while all the instruments are important in this piece, I feel like the violin played an especially significant role. Some songs were dark and heavy, but overall, this piece was bright and full of joy. So the violin's bright and gorgeous tone was a perfect match for Messiah. I loved how Alexander Wayman conducted the concert. It was surprising to see him not only conducting, but also playing the organ as a part of an orchestra. I didn't know he was also an organist, but his organ playing was amazing. As a conductor, he understands how each instrument contributes to the overall music, including the importance of the organ. And even when he couldn't use his hands, he kept the tempo by using his body and the effective eye contact. Especially in the third part, there was a soprano solo accompanied by a violinist and one cellist, and Wayman played the organ with both hands while keeping everyone in sync through each eye contact. It was so surprising, and it showed his incredible talent for leading the orchestra. I also want to talk about each soloist. First is tenor solo. This tenor has a very strong and powerful voice, especially when he has the high notes and holds them for a long time. I also love how he expresses different emotions with his facial expressions. In the first part, he looks happy, full of joy, but in the second part, he looks so serious, sad, and full of pain. I could feel the story not only in his voice, but also in his facial expressions. Next is soprano solo. The soprano solo was amazing too. I couldn't believe how beautiful her high-pitched voice was. It was so clear and reached my ears directly. Her voice sounded pure without any other elements mixed in. Especially towards the end of the second part, there were several moments where she sang with extremely high pitch, and I got goosebumps just from listening to it. I really like her voice. And next is bass solo. When I first heard the bass solo, it sounded more like an instrument than a voice. His voice came from the bottom of his belly and resonated so well. The first bass solo in the first part sounded very challenging because of the first consecutive pitch changes. But I could tell he used his belly effectively and sang the part well. The last is alto solo. I felt the same thing in the alto solo as well as the bass solo, maybe because of the many fast pitch changes. Her singing also seemed to come from deep within her body. And I especially enjoyed the alto solo in the second part because her beautiful low-pitched voice truly matched that section. Her voice was beautiful but carried some sadness, and she expressed and conveyed the story through her eyes as well. The choir plays a crucial role in the Messiah performance. There are many canon-style music structures, such as the alto following the soprano, the tenor following the alto, and the bass following the tenor. It was nice to listen to as the voices gradually blended together. creating layers of music and a rich texture. While each chorus part sounded great individually, it was amazing when different chorus parts sang together and created harmonies. The combination of the choir's harmonies and the music from the orchestra made the overall sound even more powerful and mesmerizing. When the concert ended, there was a standing ovation and everyone kept applauding. I really enjoyed the concert and had a great time. And I was also happy to see that the rest of the audience felt the same way. I was so happy to share such a wonderful experience with everyone. It was my first time experiencing the entire Messiah, but this concert gave me a chance to dive into Handel's music. And it was so amazing. The orchestra and choir blend together so beautifully, creating a rich and enchanting atmosphere that's perfect for the Christmas season. I highly recommend attending similar events for those interested in classical music, as a combination of talented performers, a beautiful venue, and timeless music creates a memorable and enriching experience. And that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ayu.
Thank you, too.
Sounds like you really enjoyed the concert.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the concert.
What do you think was your favorite part?
Favorite part is definitely Hallelujah chorus, yeah. Because I've heard that song before, mm-hmm. but it was my first time listening to live performance, mm-hmm. so it was so nice to listen to.
Interesting. You mentioned how you wanted to, it really made you want to sing along.
Yeah, because I was in choir when I was in high school. I really liked to sing. It was so nice.
I was looking online. There's a number of sing-along Hallelujah performances that happen in December. As far as I can tell, I think they've all happened. There was one on Saturday. With different organizations, the United Voices Choir and Tafel Music and some others. So for those of you like yourself who love the Messiah and don't want to just sit and watch, but you want to join in.
Yeah, join in.
There are some opportunities for that. Early Music Vancouver does have some shows coming up next month. They are doing three performances as part of the Luminous Hour Festival. So they're performing at the Vancouver Playhouse on Friday, January 12th, the West Vancouver United Church on the 13th, and the Sanctuary Vancouver Unitarian Church on the 14th. All different performances. And I do have a little, it's kind of like a little trailer for those performances. So why don't we take a listen to that right now. As we were saying, Early Music Vancouver has three performances coming up next month in Vancouver on Friday, January 12th, Saturday the 13th, and Sunday the 14th. And you can find more about that at their website, which is www.earlymusic.ca. www.earlymusic.bc.ca. You can find more about their upcoming concerts. And I really loved their presentation of the Messiah just this last Friday night.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming in and telling us all about it. Now it's time for Bird Note. In a few moments, we'll be here with Peter talking about turning from all this happy holiday discussion and music to a more serious and perhaps grimmer topic of Henry Kissinger. So stay tuned for that coming up in just a moment.
This is Bird Note. Male birds are often the larger, flashier sex that courts choosy females, which in turn raise their chicks. The male's attention-getting tactics include the virtuoso songs of lyrebirds, the booming built-in bagpipes of a male sage grouse, and individual drumming rhythms of palm cockatoos. However, in other species, females compete for males, and the males then tend the nest and raise the chicks. With jacanas, also known as lily trotters for their fabulous long toes that allow them to walk on lily pads, females challenge each other over territories in which to house a cluster of males half their size, and the males perform all the childcare. The females of three species of phalaropes, Wilson's, red-necked, and red, also rule the roost. They fight over males, sometimes mating with many. The female chooses the nest site, but then leaves the male with incubation and raising the young. Other stay-at-home dads include most of the ratites, such as ostriches, emus, and kiwis, which branched off early in bird evolution, suggesting that this childcare arrangement may have very old origins. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
Fred Kelly and Stained Glass. That's from the album Blurry Vision, new on our playlist here at CJSF 90.1 FM radio. You're listening to Speak Up. And Peter's here. Peter Haskell is here. We're going to talk about
Henry Kitt Press, the last you're going to hear about it because that's sort of old news a little bit. But I'm going to go over what's negative about him, which was covered on Democracy Now.
Sure, let's just set up Henry Kissinger a bit for those who don't know. Henry Kissinger was an American diplomat, and I guess you could call him a politician. I don't think he ever ran for office.
No, he wasn't. He was National Security Advisor 1969 to 73, then Secretary of State 73 to 77. So there was a brief period when he was both in 1973.
Yep. Right. And of course, if you weren't around for those days, you've probably seen his name a bunch in social media. He passed away about a week ago. Immediately, certainly my social media feed was full of people condemning him.
Yes.
So maybe you're going to give us a bit of this history here.
Okay. The three things that I think indict him is the bombing of Cambodia, which was actually a secret bombing in 1969, and somebody's phoning the ghost of Henry Kissinger or something. Anyway, so and then it was a more public bombing by 71, and it was Nixon who basically okayed it, so the buck stops with him, but it was kind of Kissinger's idea. Now, the other thing is 1973 in Chile, there was a democratically elected socialist government, and he just felt, well, why don't we just put a fascist dictatorship instead? Mm-hmm. That was later condemned. I think the leader of that was found guilty and years later. And here's something that's not brought up, but it's the third thing. In 1975, late 75, Henry Kissinger, with President Ford, he met with the president of Indonesia, mm-hmm. and they basically green lighted the invasion of East Timor.
Right.
So that's one thing that's perhaps not brought up, but. So those are three indictments against him. Now, but he has had his defenders and people who have liked him over the years, and still to this very day. And in 1974, Newsweek magazine had a cover article on him, and it was a cartoon. He's a Superman, except he has a K, except of the S.
Well, that's one of the things that's really interesting about him, because of course, as I say, you know, after he died recently, you know, my social media feed and I think, you know, in many places was filled with a lot of negative assessments of him, you know, some of, you know, frequently being condemned as a war criminal, but at the same at this time that you're talking about, in the early 70s, he was kind of like a colossus who strode across American foreign policy, and was in many ways seen as something of a hero.
So, I mean, yeah, well, at times. In fact, one thing he said about years later about Chile, he said, oh, well, the exact quote. Oh, human rights were not an international issue, but they have become since. Mm-hmm. That's what he had to say about what he did in Chile years later. So,
I guess perhaps that's maybe the crux of what people don't like about him.
Well, you know, yes,
sort of disdain of human rights opposed to.
And yet, for example, Rachel Maddow, wasn't either positive or negative, because mm-hmm. I accidentally got something on the BBC. She was interviewed by the BBC. They brought it up, and surprisingly, she wasn't negative as such.
Oh, interesting.
So you would have thought so, but
yeah.
And of course, Hillary Clinton tended to like him too. And I actually read the article.
Yeah.
I
went tell us about it.
So anyway, what they were impressed with Newsweek was he had persuaded Israel and Syria to disengage with their armies, mm-hmm. and this took 33 days and 24,000 miles of shuffled diplomacy. And I don't know. Do you know what happened to that? Whether it stayed, that little peace with Syria?
Well, I think it's like everything in the Israeli-Palestine Middle East wars. Every piece seems to be temporary. You know?
And they also mentioned the article that how he they were pleased with how he handled the Vietnam thing, as such.
Yeah.
Now here's the president of Syria, mm-hmm. and it's pretty positive about him. But we'll just give it, because you know he does get positive reviews. So mm-hmm. he said at the time that Dr. Kissinger was very good in positive impressions. He made enormous efforts, and our talks were always constructive. It could not have been done without him. So that was what he had to say about how he engaged with the person. So he and a lot of people liked him at the time. I think maybe it's that people weren't that concerned what happened in Chile or whatever. Mm. It was mainly what are the American interests, or even was delay public.
Yeah.
Now, I also have a few letters from a few from the other issues, you know, they have the letters.
Yep.
And they were positive towards the article was, except for one person. One person thought they were favorable towards Kissinger, but they didn't like that they had the cartoon of him as Superman. They thought that was not in the dignity of him. Now, here's one descending letter. I fully agree with Spiro Agnew that the liberal press needs to be chastised. It's entirely too kind to Henry Kissinger. Now, Spiro Agnew had been forced partly because of tax invasion a year previously. He was not the vice president anymore.
Forced from office to resign, yeah.
So it's interesting that that's sort of a, I don't know where that's coming from. But over the years, the conspiratorial people have not liked him because he went to everything. He went to Bilderbergs. He went to World Economic Forums and the Bohemian Grove, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. So a lot of what they call the far right over the years got kind of down on him. They saw him as the establishment and collaborating with it. Mm-hmm. But other conservative voices like Sean Hannity on Fox News, I saw him say, oh, he was really a great guy. So if you're right wing but don't get conspiratorial, you seem to have liked Henry Kissinger, actually.
Yep.
And you've got something else to say?
No.
Okay, so yeah, I can. Here's something else. I did a few things. You know, here it's got my notes here.
Yep.
Anyway, he was interviewed by Mike Wallace in 1958.
Oh.
Now, that's quite early. And yep. Before he got the appointment of National Security Advisor, he was at Harvard, teaching at Harvard.
Yep.
And he had written some books. Now, Mike Wallace wasn't on 60 Minutes yet. He had his own show. Mm-hmm. And it was a half-hour interview, and I saw the whole thing. And what Kissinger was advocating was actually a limited war agreement. He thought that the United States was wrong saying, well, we got atomic war. If you have any kind of a war, there's going to be trouble. He said we should always be open to a limited war. And that was his kind of concept.
Right.
Which, I don't know, seems kind of crazy to me. But.
So it's interesting, you know, despite all the difference of opinion about him, I mean, in many regard him as a war criminal today.
Right.
Yet in 75 or 76, I forget the date exactly, he was also won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, that's right. That's,
you know,
right.
For brokering, I guess it was sort of like a ceasefire armistice agreement between the United States and North Vietnam that basically ended the Vietnam War and allowed the Americans to withdraw, and he won the Peace Prize for that. But then, you know, I think, and at that time, like I say, he was kind of in the 70s, very much lauded as kind of a hero and a genius of foreign policy and, you know, a kind of American hero. And over time, you know, I think that opinion has been very much reassessed for some of the things you mentioned, like bombing of Laos. And I think maybe his commitment to real politic, to, you know, getting political and foreign policy results regardless of what it takes to get there.
Well, the other thing about the bombing of Cambodian loss, they got a Marxist government afterwards that mm-hmm. I think they wouldn't have had other, because right. The people got so kind of fed up. And actually, I saw in 1978, Nixon was interviewed. They said, well, how do you feel about, do you think you should have bombed Cambodia? So why should have done it sooner? And that I went to the president of Cambodia, and he said it was okay. I mean, but the person who he bombed, I don't think we're okay with it. But anyway.
Right. Well, I suspect with the Khmer Rouge, the president of Cambodia wasn't around to verify or not that information. Before we finish up here, I'm just going to read you just a couple of headlines that sort of give a bit of a sense of the current assessment of Henry Kissinger. And it's kind of varied. Opinion piece from the New York Times. Kissinger was right about China, and he still is. Foreign Policy magazine. Henry Kissinger wasn't really a realist. New York Times opinion. Kissinger should be remembered for the suffering he caused. Al Jazeera. Kissinger, a war criminal with a Nobel Peace Prize. And The Atlantic, the humbling of Henry Kissinger. A real difference of opinion. Thanks for talking to us about this today, Peter.
Okay.
All right, we are almost out of time here, but we have a quick segment put together by our intern Kay, a bit of a streeter, and let's have a listen to that.
It's the first day of December. I mean, winter is really coming. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing to do about winter?
My name is Tanbir. Getting a hot chocolate and watching a movie and just getting like a blanket and being cozy.
Why do you like it?
I think it's just comfortable, and it like makes me feel very happy, and it gives me all like the good vibes. I would say like when I like going to like the markets, like when it's all lit up, it looks really nice. It's like a fun activity to do with friends and family.
Dominic Kowalski. Well, in the winter, you know, I like the snow, I like the colder temperatures. It's just nice to get warm with next to a fire, you know, that just a nicer atmosphere. Summer gets too hot, winter can put on a jacket, just enjoy.
My name's Alexis. Oh, that's hard. I like so many things about winter. I like Christmas, obviously, coming up and preparing for Christmas, so like decorating, all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah, it's Troy. Chilling on the couch, doing nothing. Well, maybe watch some TV.
Why do you like it?
Oh, because it's cold outside. Yeah, so I tend to, you know, just sitting on couch with maybe a blanket covering the body and put on some music or some TV show. Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do about winter?
Hey, my name is Jenny. Mine is ice skating, like specifically at the shipyards in North Vancouver. They have a cool ice rink. Well, I like the vibes. It's like near a lot of people and it's just really fun to go ice skating.
Jazz. Play snowball fights with my friends.
Why do you like it?
It's just fun. I don't know, I get to play with friends and whatnot. It's like, I don't know, it's just fun.
Her Jasleen, sit outside with my friends and just enjoy the weather. Yeah, I know it's like kind of very cold, but I love it. Yeah, and eating something or drinking something hot.
How about you?
My name is Sirat. Yeah, same here. I just like dream of watching the snowfall and sitting in the center at the bench and the snowfall over and dreaming of it. Yeah.
I like winters, but summers always.
Summers are more comfortable.
Yeah.
Like in winters, we have to like pack ourselves completely. Yeah.
All right. Some thoughts about your favorite part of winter. What's your favorite part of winter, Ayu?
I like to feel the Christmas vibe, so I like to go to Christmas concert, like candlelight concert.
Oh, nice.
And also go to Christmas market, like that.
How about you, Peter? Are you a fan of winter?
Well, winter's, it's okay. I don't complain too much about it, but I don't see much positive in it, actually.
I like the snow when it comes, and then it doesn't stay so long here in Vancouver. That's always nice. I'm looking forward to Christmas and getting to some concerts and seeing all the lights around town. All right, we're almost out of time here. Thank you for listening to Speak Up today. Thank you to Ayu for her review of the Early Music Vancouver concert.
Yeah, thank you.
And Peter for our chat about Henry Kissinger. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Any moment now.